Ancient World, Ancient Nukes. Chapter 5, The Socratic Gadfly, Sound Mind and Nuclear Revelations. In the Garden of Eden, Adam stood transfixed by the burning bush, fire that did not consume. This primal force stirred within him, hinting at a power beyond nature. Could this, in turn, be the path through which humanity might touch the divine? Adam pondered whether such a force could elevate mankind beyond the natural world. This same energy seemed to connect Eden to Egypt's golden age. With its towering pyramids, Egypt had tapped into a mysterious power, a force capable of ensuring their greatness. But with such power came danger, unpredictable and far beyond their control. Meanwhile, in Israel, King David, driven by conquest, saw the Ark of the Covenant not just as a sacred relic, but a vessel of creation and destruction. And the same fire that consumed Sodom and Gomorrah could now be wielded as a weapon, and David believed it could ensure Israel's dominance. Yet Solomon, his son, recognized the danger. The demons he commanded warned him of the devastation that awaited if the Ark's power was unleashed. With Israel caught between conquest and caution, the connection between Eden, Egypt, and Israel grew clearer. Across time and space, these civilizations were bound by a force that transcended natural law. Their destinies intertwined in a cosmic dance that blurred the lines of time. Next in line is the Greek-speaking world, at the height of its culture and philosophic achievements, where the stage was set for a new era of contemplation and power. The sound of wind sweeping through the grand marble columns of an open courtyard carried throughout the area, and the distant hum of philosophical debate fills the air as the sound of swords clashing drifts in from the training grounds where warriors practice. In the ancient Greek-speaking world where thought and power intertwine, the great philosophers gather to debate the mysteries of existence while warriors sharpen their swords preparing for conquest. This is an age of reason, but also an age of ambition where the pursuit of knowledge and power may collide. The scene transitions directly to a lively discussion between philosophers seated under the open sky. The sound of scrolls being unrolled, the soft murmur of intellectual debate, fills the air. One of the thinkers is Socrates, a philosopher at large, a self-described gadfly that seeks to challenge the assumptions and knowledge of those who thought themselves worthy of these discussions. And he is engaged in a dialogue with one of his prized pupils, Plato. Socrates is a rugged older man with a stocky build, his face lined with the marks of deep thought and many years of teaching. He wears a simple tunic embodying his disdain for material wealth. His sharp eyes radiate curiosity and wisdom, though his unassuming appearance belies the sharpness of his intellect. Known for his method of questioning and dialogue, Socrates is the figure who challenges the very foundations of knowledge. He is in the course of one of these challenges as the scene opens, as he turns to Plato thoughtful and says, "Tell me, Plato, this notion of the atom, the smallest indivisible unit of all matter. Do you think it truly exists, or is it just another concept born from our desire to distill the world into simpler forms?" Student Plato, reflective, pauses for a moment, then answers, "The atom, Socrates, may be the key to understanding the very nature of reality. Unlike the divine gifts of the Hebrews or the ancient forces wielded by Egypt, the atom in our world is a building block, a physical structure at the heart of everything. The Greeks, I believe, seek truth in the very fabric of existence, not merely the forms beyond it. And Socrates, with a grin, answers, "Ah, yes, the search for the structure beneath the surface. Practical, perhaps, yet still elusive, no? Does it not fascinate you that while we seek to understand the smallest particles of the world, others see these forces as gifts from the gods?" The exchange introduces the Greek way of looking at things, contrasting it with the more mystical views of Egypt and the Hebrews, and it sets up a discussion of Plato and his relationship with Socrates, while also pointing to the philosophical depth beyond Greek inquiry. Plato is younger and more refined in appearance than his mentor Socrates. He is tall, with a graceful posture. His robe is finely woven, indicating his status and education. His youthful face carries the intensity of a philosopher constantly searching for truth. Plato's sharp mind is filled with ideas that blend with his master's teachings and also with his own burgeoning thoughts on the nature of reality, truth, and the ideal forms. The discussion unfolds in a vibrant terrace garden in the heart of the Greek world. The air is warm and sunlight filters through lush greenery, casting dappled shadows on the stone floor. Socrates and Plato stand near a row of classical pillars, the majestic architecture of the Greek world framing their intense discourse. The columns rise high, symbols of strength and balance, while statues of Greek deities watch silently from the edges of the garden. Around them, the terrace garden is alive with subtle beauty. Vines twist around marble statues, and the scent of herbs and flowers drifts gently through the air. The sounds of distant voices and the hum of the city activity is still faintly recognizable, but the two philosophers remain absorbed in their exchange, standing amidst the timeless splendor of the ancient Greek world, discussing the very nature of reality itself. Socrates takes a pivot in their discussion. "Knowledge leads us to enlightenment, but knowledge without restraint leads only to chaos. So we must ask ourselves not what we can achieve, but what we should achieve." And Plato agrees. "You are right, Socrates. Power must be tempered with wisdom. For what good is knowledge if used only to dominate others? The true measure of a civilization is its ability to master just not the world, but itself." Footsteps approach as a warrior fresh from the training grounds interrupts the debate. His voice is bold and impatient, contrasting with the philosopher's measured tones. And the warrior says, "Philosophers, while you speak of restraint, our enemies gather at our borders. Knowledge is useless if we do not wield our weapons and our knowledge itself to be better fighters. Should we not seize every opportunity to protect our people and expand our empire?" And Socrates says calmly, "Power wielded without thought leads to destruction. Look at the history of those who came before us. Did they not fail because of their hubris? You speak of strength, but strength without understanding is a dangerous thing." The warrior scoffs, his impatience clear. "You fear the unknown, Socrates, but what you fear is what will save us. Knowledge must be used, not hidden away." The warrior is tall, hardened from battle, scars on his skin, eyes flashing with ambition. Plato contends, "Strength is important, yes, but strength without wisdom is no strength at all. What we are on is the verge of discovering what could change everything, but we must choose carefully what we do with this power." The scene transitions to a quiet library where the sound of ancient scrolls and tablets being unrolled can be heard. Philosophers hunch over tables studying the mysterious linear script A. In the pursuit of knowledge, the philosophers of the ancient Greek-speaking world sought to uncover the secrets of the past. Among their greatest challenges was the mysterious Linear Scriptae, a writing system of a prior civilization that defied their best efforts to understand it for generations. Linear Scriptae was a writing system that was believed to have symbols with the keys to unlocking a power far greater than that known to any man. There is the soft scratch of quills on parchment filling the room as a young philosopher approaches the table where Socrates and Plato are seated. The young philosopher says, "We've been studying the Linear Script for months, and yet its meaning eludes us. Do you believe that it in fact holds the secret to the knowledge that we seek?" And Socrates says, "Well, perhaps. But even if we decipher it, the question remains what we will do with this knowledge. Knowledge, when used without thought, becomes a burden. History is filled with examples of civilizations that have crumbled beneath the weight of their own discoveries." And Plato concurs, "Indeed, the symbols are ancient, older than even the myths of our forefathers. Perhaps they are a warning left behind by those who came before us, or a test of our restraint." The young philosopher frowns, staring at the incomprehensible script before him. The faint flicker of torchlight adds to the atmosphere of mystery. The young philosopher presses on. "If this knowledge could bring us untold power, is it not worth the risk?" And Socrates asks, "Tell me, what would you do with such power, should it fall into your hands?" That is the question we all must ask ourselves. Knowledge is a gift, but it is also a responsibility. Are we prepared for what it might reveal? The young philosopher hesitates, torn between curiosity and the wisdom of his elders. The soft flicker of torches in the background creates a hushed, thoughtful atmosphere. In the pursuit of understanding, the philosophers of the ancient world wrestle with the dangers of knowledge. The question is not simply what they can learn, but what they should learn and how such knowledge might change the course of their civilization for the better. The discussion continues outdoors again the following day. The soft clashing of swords can be heard in the distance. In the shadow of knowledge, the ancient Greek-speaking world stands at a crossroads. The warriors call for action, urging the use of newfound power to secure their future, while the philosophers preach caution, warning that the pursuit of power without wisdom will lead to ruin. The warrior returns, more determined than ever, his voice cutting through the calm tones of the philosophers. The warrior now challenges both Socrates and Plato directly. "You speak of caution, Socrates, but caution will not defend our people. Will you just let our enemies crush us because you fear the unknown?" And Socrates responds with calmness, "Who says I fear the unknown? I do not fear the unknown. I fear the consequences of acting without wisdom. Those who came before us, did they not fall because they reached for power without considering the price? Will we make the same mistake?" The warrior steps closer, his voice growing more intense. "If we do not act, we will lose everything. Knowledge is a weapon, and like any weapon, it must be used before our enemies use it against us." Plato is firm, even warning. "You speak of strength, but it is a strength without understanding. We must be cautious, for the knowledge you seek could unravel everything we hold dear, especially when it comes to these atoms, the building blocks of all reality. Are you willing to take that risk?" The warrior hesitates, conflicted but still determined. The tension between action and caution grows as the sounds of the warrior's training grows louder. The warrior insists, "To do nothing is to risk defeat, but to act may bring victory." And Socrates says, "And to act without wisdom may bring destruction. I might be hungry, but to stick my hand into a bee's nest, that would bring destruction much sooner than my hunger might. so we must choose carefully. Talk continues with the clashing swords and the hum of philosophical debate. Continuing in the background, neither side fully yielding to the other. The ancient Greek-speaking world, it faces a choice, whether to wield the power they are on the verge of discovering or to temper it with restraint. But the forces they are dealing with are greater than they can know, and soon the consequences of their choices will be revealed. The scene closes with the distant sounds of battle training, the clinking of armor, and the soft murmur of intellectual debate. The philosophers continue to grapple with the burden of knowledge while the warriors prepare for the inevitable conflict. And so in the ancient Greek-speaking world, knowledge and power are on the brink of collision. The warriors push for action while the philosophers call for restraint. The ancient Greek world, still exploring the nature of reality, lags behind in nuclear advancement. It needs help from another civilization to catch up, namely Egypt, which has accessed Atlantis's ancient technology, a likely ally. However, such an alliance would force the ancient Greek world to use any developed weapons, as it now would owe Egypt for weapons and for weapons support, and would have to contribute as an ally if Egypt became involved in a nuclear exchange. Meanwhile, the warrior class in the ancient Greek-speaking world is driven beyond its usual fervor, seeking to perfect the atom as a weapon. Socrates and Plato wonder, is it mere instinct for power or something greater at play compelling this push for the use of the atom in an offensive way?